what in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. Here it is, the 19th of April, 2005. I'm Chris Gerner speaking to you after doing this for a number of years. Things remain the same. The UN picture continues to embellish itself around situations that most people don't have a clue about, that should know better, but they don't. And that is just the way it is. Much going on in the world today, and certainly the anniversary is probably encompassing many a talk show all over the country, the 10-year anniversary, and certainly I'm going to deal with that tonight, too, a little bit. Thursday night we're going to have Chris Emery on with more than likely former Representative Charles Key to discuss what happened and what's happening right now in this area of Oklahoma City. But most and everybody is not paying attention to the World Trade Organization and the WTO, the original WTO, not the World Toilet Organization, but the World Trade Organization. On today, April 19th, 2005, welcome the launch by Stanford University Libraries and Academic Information Resources of a website to permit access, public access, to de-restricted documents of the GATT, the predecessor of the WTO. That is today of the World Trade Organization. And once again, this is very, very interesting. Stanford University Libraries and Academic Information Resources, SULAR, or SULAIR, and here's a quote. The WTO has worked with SULAIR to make this historic collection accessible to the public as part of our ongoing efforts to share information that contributes to a better understanding of the WTO and the multilateral trading system, end quote, said WTO Director General, and I've been working on this guy's name for a lot of minutes, listeners, Supachi Panatachigatki. Quote, the work carried out by Soulaire to scan these thousands of documents and make them available through the Internet will be especially important for academics, trade specialists, and others with an interest in how the trading system evolved in the GATT era from 1947 to 1994, end quote. So right there, the whole UN system shows itself in that statement, starting in 1947, bringing us to the point where most of our jobs and businesses and manufacturing jobs especially have gone below the border and overseas, starting in 1947. This information continues from the historical archives of the WTO. Another objective of the project carried out by Soulaire and the WTO was to ensure the presentation of this unique collection of documents, which had until now only been available in the original paper versions. The collection being made available by Soulaire consists essentially of English language documents. The WTO website currently offers public access to over 150,000 WTO official documents in English, French, and Spanish from 1995 to the present. The addition of GATT documents from 1947 to 1994 on the Soulaire website will be a complement to the WTO collection. The WTO Secretariat has worked with SUL team, that would be the Stanford University Libraries team, to sort and organize the GATT documents. Under an agreement which saw Soulaire assume the cost for the work of scanning and converting the documents to electronic versions. Straight from the WTO, listeners. Fascinating. If you want to really know the big picture in place, that's where you go. That's where you understand how, economically, the playing field of the world is changing at an unprecedented rate over the last 10 years, and over the since 1947. And it's quite amazing to see how things have turned and directed itself to where we are today. Waco, Oklahoma City, and the Post 9/11 Left-Right Dynamic by Anthony Gregory kind of sums it up. I'll interrupt if I don't agree with this gentleman. 10 years ago, on April 19, 1995, the largest terrorist attack in U.S. history on American soil occurred when an explosion brought down the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City and snuffed out the lives of 168 individuals, including 19 children. After the initial shock, the political implications began to surface. Clinton implicitly blamed the attack on right-wing radio talk show and its purveyors of hate and division, and left liberal pundits echoed the same line. Reactionary anti-Clintonianism opposed to the gun-grabbing, social engineering, and the taxing and spending of the Clinton regime was the root cause of the Oklahoma massacre, we were told. The more libertarian and less establishment wing of the conservative movement was the culprit. Neither forgotten or distorted at the time was the connection between Oklahoma and Waco. Exactly 2 years before the Oklahoma City bombing, the FBI put the finishing touches on the federal government's 51-day standoff with the Branch Davidians, finalizing the embarrassing chapter in law enforcement, or federal law enforcement, by sending a tank through the home of David Koresh and his followers, injecting the building with poisonous CS gas, launching incendiary devices at the building, and shooting with machine guns those who attempted to escape the inferno. About 80 civilians, including about 20 children, died in Waco, and Timothy McVeigh referred to the attack at Oklahoma City as the payback for what the federal government did 2 years earlier. Those who pointed this out in the days after Oklahoma were walking on eggshells. The left liberal establishment, along with most of the Republican politicians, did not want to think of Oklahoma as somewhat explainable, even if in no way excusable, in the context of the criminal acts of the U.S. government. To say that state violence paved the way to terrorist violence was condemned as making excuses for the latter. Even worse, to focus too much on the federal government's atrocity at Waco, or even its run-of-the-mill bureaucratic despotism in general, became even as somehow erring or aiding the enemies of American civilization and even encouraging mass murders like Tim McVeigh. And once again, I interject that I say Tim McVeigh was mind-controlled. Tim McVeigh was a very small part of the operation, and he was the Lee Harvey Oswald of the Oklahoma City bombing. After Oklahoma, Congress engaged in some hearings on Waco and discovered, predictably, that the U.S. government had done nothing seriously wrong. The Republican Congress, the conservative establishment, and most of the conservative movement came to validate the Clinton line on Waco, epitomized by his flippant statement the day after the massacre of the Branch Davidians. Quote, I do not think the United States government is responsible for the fact that a bunch of religious fanatics decided to kill themselves, end quote. In response to Oklahoma, the Congress passed the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. The police state began to grow, with the continuing facade of Clintonian domestic social engineering and the soft socialism of the Democratic Party. Clinton, who said shortly after Oklahoma that, quote, there is nothing patriotic about hating your government or pretending you hate your government but love your country, end quote, continued to intimidate many conservatives into turning away from fundamental criticism of the modern state and its grandest horrors. But many conservatives continue to hate the government and love their country. Many refuse to swallow the new convention that topics such as Waco were now off limits, and that to oppose the federal government, even after Oklahoma, was a tactically side that such terrorists as Tim McVeigh. In 1997, even John Ashcroft responded to a proposed internet surveillance bill by saying, quote, the administration's interest in all email is a wholly unhealthy precedent, especially given this administration's track record on FBI files and IRS snooping. Every medium by which people communicate can be subject to exploitation by those with illegal intentions. Nevertheless, this is no reason to hand Big Brother the keys to unlock our email diaries, even our ATM records, read our medical records, or translate our international communication, end quote. As bad as the Republicans were, they seemed much less willing than the Democrats to turn a tragedy such as Oklahoma into an occasion to build a total state. On September 11, 2001, the largest terrorist attack on American soil, the hijacking of four planes and the destruction of the World Trade Center, part of the Pentagon, and more than 3,000 American lives, far exceeded in bloodshed, property damage, and government reaction what had happened about 6.5 years earlier in Oklahoma. But this time, the Republicans were in power. Quote, you are either with us or you are with the terrorists, end quote. Once again, you are either with us or you are with the terrorists, uttered by the Republican president, became the new slogan for most of the conservative movement. Centered throughout, Americans, libertarians, liberals, and even some conservatives pointed out that 9/11 occurred as a result of decades of inexcusable U.S. foreign policy, atrocities such as the first Gulf War, the sanctions in Iraq that were that had killed hundreds of thousands of children, the stationing of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, the propping up of anti-democratic terrorists in the Middle East, and the military support of Israel, and these concerned and thoughtful Americans were accused of aiding the enemy, defending the terrorist attacks, siding against America. As Bush rammed the Patriot Act through Congress, erecting the surveillance state that conservatives rightfully feared Clinton wanted to implement throughout the 1990s, but never had the political capital to do so, many conservatives this time went along with the federal power grab, agreeing with the new post 9/11 John Ashcroft that, quote, those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty only aid terrorists, for they erode our national unity and diminish our resolve. They give ammunition to America's enemies and pause to America's friends, end quote. In the years since 9/11, the mainstream conservative movement has not relented much in its hostility toward dissent on foreign policy and national security issues. Many conservatives today don't want to listen to explanations of anti-American terrorist attacks as a symptom of an aggressive U.S. foreign policy, to discuss hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqi babies as seen as totally inappropriate and tactless, perhaps even seditious, when contemplating 9/11 and how best to respond to it. And to oppose the next war, advertised as one in defense of the U.S., is also taboo. Indeed, to oppose U.S. foreign policy is to oppose the country. As President Bush might say, if we were as eloquent as Bill Clinton, quote, there's nothing patriotic about hating your government or pretending you can hate your government but love your country, end quote. Nowadays, it is mostly the left that stands up against federal usurpation of police power, new surveillance mechanisms, the burgeoning police state, and the harassment of anti-government dissidents. Today, it is the left that cries out the distinctions between patriotism and nationalism, explanations for terrorism and excuses for it. Today, it is the left that the establishment generally agrees helps to give aid and comfort to the enemy. Conservatives don't talk that much about Waco anymore. April 19th is more remembered by most Americans for what happened in Oklahoma 10 years ago, the anti-government act of mass murder, than what happened 12 years ago, the government's act of mass murder. Indeed, the new conservative line in Oklahoma is about as pro-government as it gets, blaming the atrocity on Saddam Hussein and somehow using the event that shielded Clinton from conservative criticism to justify Bush's war on terror. Some conservatives still condemn Waco, all the while cheering on Iraq, where Waco has been happening every day since the invasion. Liberals, on the other hand, don't seem to fully appreciate that they are in a similar position that conservatives were after Oklahoma. Much of the reason might be partisan politics. Waco and Oklahoma happened under Clinton, while the two Iraq wars and 9/11 happened under Bush's. Perhaps it reflects the conservative inclination to defend foreign intervention and reject criticism of it, and the liberal inclination to defend domestic intervention. However, the question becomes blurred when we look more closely at the events. McVeigh was a soldier of the U.S. state who had gone to the first Gulf War under the command of a Republican administration. Although many conservatives, even ones horrified by Waco and not intimidated completely by Oklahoma, probably never cared to admit it, the effect of the first Bush's war on McVeigh was instrumental. He saw himself as at war with the federal government and thought of his innocent victims as collateral damage. It was not just the state violence of Clinton's Waco, but also of Bush's Desert Storm that created Tim McVeigh. The right never fully came to terms with this, and most of the left never fully realized it. The bipartisan support for police state responses to Oklahoma in 9/11 also blurs the issue. So too does the bipartisan support and whitewashing of most federal atrocities, whether in the Middle East or on American soil, demonstrate that this is not a Republican versus Democratic issue, at least not as far as the establishment is concerned. After all, it was during the first Bush regime that the Waco siege was initially planned and the Ruby Ridge massacre was conducted. And it was Clinton's Madeleine Albright that called hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqi children as a price well worth it to put pressure on former U.S. ally Saddam Hussein. The American police state and warfare state often draw criticism predominantly from either the left or right, depending on the partisan flavor of the regime. During Waco, although some bold leftists saw through the federal lies, there was silence among mainstream liberals who didn't want to agree with the right-wing extremists that Clinton had done something so awful. In thinking of Iraq today, even conservatives who should know better and realize on some level that this is not in any way a proper response to 9/11, that indeed this is the kind of intervention that led to 9/11, are resonant to agree with the extremist far left on American foreign policy. The left and right disagree on many issues, but such crucial ones such as aggressive war and the dangerous federal police state have drawn similar criticism from people on both sides, often at different times. For liberty to triumph, the more libertarian wings of both left and right need to see their common goals, see through their partisan smokescreens, and recognize at all times that opposition to and fundamental criticism of the state do not necessarily imply hatred of America or solidarity with its most murderous enemies. To defend Americans from anti-U.S. terrorism, a necessary element is reducing state terrorism, greatly scaling back the power and size of U.S. government, and revoking its license to kill and get away with it. Conservatives today might be able to wrap themselves in the flag and condemn dissidents as traitors, but before they know it, another Clinton might come to power and they'll be the ones again accused of assisting the enemy in opposing the state. They might come once again to see the difference between love of country and love of the government. Only it might be too late to bask in the distinction, thanks to the anti-dissident political atmosphere they're helping right now to create. Today's leftists, it is to be hoped, will remember the feeling of being branded a traitor should a Democrat be in power during the next national crisis of war. Remember Waco and the Iraqi sanctions. Remember Oklahoma and 9/11. To forget any of the major episodes of U.S. terrorism and anti-U.S. terrorism, to brush their relationships with one another aside and condemn those who invoke them, will not help in protecting America, much less in restoring and preserving its freedoms. I thought you should hear that because that covers a lot of ground as far as what happened. And certainly the connections of all this are very relevant to me, and certainly Republican, Democrat, for years it's just commonsensical to realize so much has happened. Think of the Nixon administration and the Vietnam War, the Johnson administration and the Vietnam War. Wow, what a terrible time that was. But it was just a transgressional projection and progression into where we are today, where police state is the call of the word. Most people don't even know what a police state is. But they just did Falcon. They just pulled Falcon off, MJTF operation nationwide. because criminals needed to be taken out. Well, who are the criminals? Who are going to be the criminals in the end? And ultimately, and in the end, anyone that is against the federal government will be a criminal and dealt with accordingly. This is what BRAC is all about, in my opinion. Base realignment and closure. Bases are being closed down, but are they being closed down? Some are being torn apart so housing developments can be built. Some are staying in one piece. You have to think about how things have been engineered in the past to where we are today. I meant to bring the William Pabst lawsuit to the table tonight. Did not do so, but Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense during the Ford administration. Donald Rumsfeld is Secretary of Defense today. Donald Rumsfeld is an ultimate insider to the big picture in place. Does Donald Rumsfeld know that there's a concentration camp program for American citizens? You better believe it. They just have to pull it off. It just has to be pulled off. And this is a sad commentary to have about all this. Very sad commentary. But this is what's going on. This is what's happening. And I'm so sorry to be this way. So sorry. On the website, AmericanExpose.com, Dennis the Menace has put up The Hidden Hand of the CIA, 9/11 and Popular Mechanics by Christopher Boylan. Or Bolin. A brutal purge of the senior staff at Popular Mechanics preceded the publication of last month's scandalous propaganda piece about 9/11. Pulling the strings is the grand dame of Hearst magazines, and behind the scene is her obscure husband, a veteran propaganda expert and former special assistant to the director of the CIA. The Reichstag fire, a key event in German history, and the steps that followed in suit leading to the Nazi dictatorship of Adolf Hitler provide remarkable precedents for what occurred in the United States on 9/11 and since. The fire that consumed the German Parliament building on the night of February 27, 1933, is widely believed, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, to have been contrived by the newly formed Nazi government to turn public opinion against its opponents and allow it to assume emergency powers. The day after the burning of the Reichstag, the government headed by Adolf Hitler enacted a decree for the protection of the people and the state. Hitler's emergency decree dispensed with all constitutional protection of political, personal, and property rights. Likewise, a month after 9/11, the U.S. Congress passed, without even reading, similar emergency legislation, the Bush administration's USA Patriot Act of 2001. The pre-prepared Massive Security Act's long title is Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. Within a month of the Reichstag fire, on March 23, 1933, the Parliament passed the Enabling Act, whereby its legislative powers were transferred to Hitler's Reich's cabinet. This act, passed by a vote of 444-94, legally sanctioned the Nazi dictatorship. More on this on the other side. More about the Minuteman movement, and much more to do in the last 30 minutes of this broadcast today for Tuesday, April 19th, 2005.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a huge power grab. If Congress approves the FTAA, our nation will be pushed down the same path that produced the European Union. There will be no more illegal immigration because there will be no enforcement of borders. Americans will lose control of their destiny as regional bureaucrats from corrupt political systems decide our future. Sound incredible? Check out the facts for yourself. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then tell Congress you want a better future for America. That's stoptheftaa.org.
Could it just be you, and you're just blaming me, or was it jealousy, and insecurity, or could it just be you, you're the misery, or was it always you, just wanting to be free?
PokerFace.com is their website. PokerFace.com is the website of the group Poker Face. Another parallel is seen in the way George W. Bush and Hitler came to power. Bush obtained the presidency in 2001 through a Supreme Court decision after a flawed and uncounted election, while Hitler secured the German chancellorship through elections in November 1932, in which the Nazi Party failed to win an outright majority. Hitler's propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, is thought to have let arsonists into the parliament building through a tunnel leading from the official residence of Hermann Göring, Reichstag president and Hitler's chief minister. Göring, or Görving, then presided over the official investigation, which blamed the communists. In a similar manner, the Bush administration openly opposed an independent investigation of 9/11 and fixed blame on Osama bin Laden and 19 Arab terrorists. Based on this official but unproven explanation for 9/11, the United States has invaded and occupied two Middle Eastern nations. Quote, 95% of the work of intelligence agencies around the world is disinformation and deception, end quote. Andreas von Bülow, former parliamentary official responsible for the budget of Germany's intelligence agencies, told American Free Press in December 2001. Like Nazi Germany of 1933, American newsstands today carry a mainstream magazine dedicated to pushing the government's truth of 9/11, while viciously smearing the independent researchers as extremists who peddle fantasies and make poisonous claims. The magazine pushing the government's 9/11 propaganda, Popular Mechanics, which I covered long ago, listeners, is published by Hearst, the Hearst family. Its March cover story, Debunking 9/11 Lies, has been exposed by credible researchers to contain numerous distortions and flawed conclusions. American Free Press revealed that Benjamin Chertoff, the 25-year-old senior researcher who authored the 9/11 article, is related to Michael Chertoff, the new secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS. The Popular Mechanics article, PM, his Popular Mechanics article, illustrates how a propaganda method used by dictatorships is now being employed by the U.S. government, controlling mainstream media outlets to promote its version of 9/11. 9/11, what a joke. Just the day it happened is a joke. A setup. The actions of Michael Chertoff concerning the events of 9/11, the non-investigation that followed, the USA Patriot Act, and the propaganda being disseminated in PM are strikingly similar to actions attributed to the Nazi ministers of Joseph Goebbels and Hermann Göring. While Chertoff is the czar of DHS, he is not sovereign to Popular Mechanics or Hearst Magazines, its corporate parent. The president of Hearst Magazines, one of the world's largest publishers of monthly magazines, with U.S. or 18 U.S. titles and more than 100 international editions, is Catherine P. Black, a 60-year-old native of Chicago. Black oversees the publication of 175 titles around the world, including Cosmopolitan, Harper's Bazaar, Town and Country, Esquire, Good Housekeeping, and Popular Mechanics. Black is a former president and publisher of USA Today. In 1983, Black was made president of the new newspaper published by Gannett. The following year, she was made publisher and soon became a member of Gannett's board of directors. Despite her efforts, her biography reads, USA Today did not show an operating profit in the 8 years that Black was there. The newspaper's non-profitability notwithstanding, Gannett paid Black $600,000 a year for her efforts. USA Today reportedly had a circulation of 1.8 million when Black left in 1991. USA Today is often given away free of charge. Black left USA Today to become president and chief executive of the Nascent Newspaper Association of America, the NAA, formed on June 1, 1992. She then became the leading spokesperson and lobbyist for the nation's newspaper industry. Black's position at the NAA carried, quote, considerable political heft, end quote. Paul Ferry of the Washington Post wrote, quote, given that the 1,400 members of her organization control the nation's editorial pages. Interesting. In 1995, for an annual salary reported to be in excess of $1 million, Black was hired by Hearst Corporation to head its magazine division, named by Fortune magazine as one of the most popular women in American business. Black sits on the boards of Hearst Corporation, the Advertising Council, IBM, and Coca-Cola. She's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Oh, boy. And what else is new? It is often said that USA Today is controlled by the CIA, which, like the paper, is based in McLean, Virginia. The little-known fact that Black is married to Thomas E. Harvey, an obscure lawyer who became a White House fellow in 1977 and served as special assistant to the Director of Central Intelligence, provides substance to these rumors. Black's corporate biography does not mention her husband. President Jimmy Carter made Harvey a White House fellow in May 1977. In that capacity, Harvey's biography reads, quote, he served as special assistant to the director of the CIA, following that he held senior appointed positions within the Department of Defense, end quote. The DCI at the time was Stansfield Turner, who had replaced George Herbert Walker Bush. Prior to serving the CIA, Harvey worked at the New York Law Office of Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy, the international law firm co-founded by Morris Hadley, a 1916 member of Yale University's Secret Society Skull and Bones, has ties to the CIA, enlists William H. Webster, DCI, from 1987 to 1991 as a senior partner. Webster also served on the Homeland Security Council. In the 1980s, Harvey served as general counsel and congressional liaison to the U.S. Information Agency, the former external propaganda arm of the U.S. government. Harvey also served as deputy assistant secretary for the Army and Navy. In 1992, Harvey was personnel director for the Bush-Quayle 1992 campaign. Calls to the office of Black and Harvey for the purpose of this article went unanswered. In the months leading up to the Chertoff article in Popular Mechanics, a brutal takeover occurred at the magazine. In September 2004, Joe Oldham, the magazine's former editor-in-chief, was replaced by James B. Meigs, who came to Popular Mechanics with a deputy, Jerry Bielson, from National Geographic Adventure. In October, a new creative director replaced Popular Mechanics' 21-year veteran, who was given 90 minutes to clear out his office. A former senior editor at Popular Mechanics, who is forbidden from openly discussing the coup at PM, told AFP that the former creative director was abruptly told to leave and given severance pay of 2 weeks' wages for every year spent at Popular Mechanics. Three or four people have been similarly dismissed every month since, he said. He was astounded that the coup at Popular Mechanics had not been reported in the mainstream media. Popular Mechanics has been a supporter of the U.S. military. The magazine ran a full-page ad in support of the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan in May 2003. Since the purge last September, however, Popular Mechanics readers have noticed that government propaganda has replaced scientific writing. A letter to the editor in the current issue says, "I think you guys are just another tool in the government's propaganda machine." This can be accessed on the website American Exposé, thanks to Dennis the Menace. Very important to connect that dot. Very important. Sad commentary to have in this late date in 2005. We are embroiled in Border 2012, listeners. The U.S.-Mexico Border 2012 program is quite amazing. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Region 9 is soliciting grant and cooperative agreement initial proposals for projects in the California, Baja California, and Arizona Sonora regional workshop regions that address the objectives of the U.S.-Mexico Border 2012 program. This is part of Agenda 21, as you'll come to the same conclusion I will if you do the research. The U.S.-Mexico Border 2012 program is a binational collaborative effort whose mission is to protect the environment and public health of the U.S.-Mexico border region. 100 kilometers either side of the U.S.-Mexico border, consistent with the principles of sustainable development. And there you have it, listeners, Agenda 21, sustainable development. Much here. Much information here. The U.S.-Mexico border program, agreement between the United States and America and Mexico, signed at La Paz, August 14, 1983. This is another direction, listeners. It's a note by the Department of State, pursuant to Public Law 89-497, approved July 8, 1966. Quote, the treaties and other international acts series issued under the authority of the Secretary of State shall be competent evidence of the treaties, international agreements, other than treaties, and proclamations by the President of such treaties and international agreements, other than treaties, as the case may be. Therein contained in all the courts of law and equity and of maritime jurisdiction, and in all the tribunals and public offices of the United States and the several states, without any further proof of authentication thereof, in quote. The U.S.-Mexico border program is a victim of the GATT, the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, the NAFTA, which is part of GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, long before Agenda 21 came into place. My point is, the UN system has been slowly implementing all these directions for many, many decades. The State Department has been improving and putting it into place, implementing the U.S. mission to the United Nations on a daily basis. The State Department. This information, U.S.-Mexico border program, the agreement between the United States of America and the United Mexican States on cooperation for the protection and improvement of the environment in the border area. Recognizing the importance of a healthful environment and the long-term economic and social well-being of present and future generations of each country, as well as the global community. Recalling that the Declaration of the United Nations Conference on Human Environment, once again, recalling that the Declaration of the United Nations Conference on the Human Environment, proclamation in Stockholm in 1972, called upon nations to collaborate to resolve environmental problems of common concern, noting previous agreements and programs providing for environmental cooperation between the two countries, believing that such cooperation is of mutual benefit in coping with similar environmental problems in each country, acknowledging the important work of the International Boundary and Water Commission and the contribution of the agreements concluded between the two countries relating to environmental affairs. Reaffirming their political will to further strengthen and demonstrate the importance attached by both governments to in cooperation on environmental protection and in furtherance of the principle of good neighborliness. Department of State Bulletin, July 24, 1972. It goes on and on and on. The United States of America and the United Mexican States, hereinafter referred to as the parties, agree to cooperate in the field of environmental protection in the border area on the basis of equality, reciprocatory, and mutual benefit. The objectives of the present agreement are to establish the basis for cooperation between the parties for the protection, improvement, and conservation of the environment. Da, 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 da. My point being that the merging of the countries together under the UN system is well underway. The Minuteman Project has received some publicity from the U.S. Border Patrol Local 2544. That's the U.S. Border Patrol Local 2544. They say, we represent Border Patrol agents and other non-supervisory employees in the Tucson sector of the U.S. Border Patrol, covering most of the state of Arizona. We are the largest local in the Border Patrol. Border Patrol agents are a group of patriotic Americans who perform the dangerous job of policing our borders. There are currently 15 to 20 million illegal aliens in this country by most estimates, but the real numbers could be much higher, and the numbers increase every day because of our borders are not secure. Local 2544 is proudly affiliated with the Arizona Police Association and the Legal Defense Fund and the law firm of Gatti Baraki LLP. And actually, that's Baranik, is the law firm Gatti Baranik LLP. Anyway, my point for doing this is this. Presidente Fox, help. Will you please order your subordinate? Evidently, this is the way it is. George Bush, to get our borders under control. See, these people evidently these people have no clue of what I've just covered with the UN system. Because this statement says Bush won't listen to the American people. He defies the will of 70 to 80% of us. But you have some obvious power over him. That's President Vicente Fox of Mexico. Can you help us out here, pal? Maybe order him to hire a few more Border Patrol agents and some equipment so we can patrol the borders. Get him to buy us a few patrol vehicles so we don't have to drive worn-out junk with over 150 to 200,000 miles on the odometer. Maybe even get him to quit enticing millions more of our countrymen to come over here of your countrymen to come over here illegally by throwing endless amnesty proposals out there and telling us we shouldn't be chasing them in the first place because they're just good-hearted people coming here to take jobs we won't do. Maybe get a two-way radio system that actually works. Anyway, the point is, these Border Patrol people, according to this local, don't have a picture of the UN system. They don't understand the migrant treaties, immigration treaties that have been allowed under the UN system and the State Department implementation of it. That is the point. Now, regarding the Minuteman Project, this website states, we want to make it clear because we've had a lot of questions about this. We have not had one single complaint from a rank-and-file agent in this sector about the Minuteman. Every report we've received indicates that these people are very supportive of the rank-and-file agents. They're courteous. Many of them are retired firefighters, cops, and other professionals, and they're not causing us any problems whatsoever. Reports of them causing ground sensors to go off are exaggerated because most of these are being set off by the ACLU sneaking around trying to find the Minutemen doing something wrong. The Minutemen have succeeded in shifting the bulk of the illegal alien traffic out of the narco corridor. If only President Bush were so supportive of the rank-and-file agents. While President Bush hangs out thousands of miles away in the White House, these people are willing to give up their time and energy to actually do something. While President Bush entices millions of illegal aliens to keep coming with his amnesty proposals and his demoralizing statements that he doesn't want Border Patrol agents chasing good-hearted people just coming here to take jobs Americans won't do. The Minutemen are trying to get our laws enforced. The Minutemen have made it very clear that they fully support rank-and-file Border Patrol agents. If only we had such support from the politicians who have to work for, or they have to, we have to work for, is what they say. The point is, President Bush is, just like President Clinton, a figurehead implementing the UN agenda in the United States and the rest of the world. That's what this is all about. That's what's going on. Is there going to be a conflict at the border? More than likely. I don't see where else it's going to go. The people south of the border, some of them being propagandized under communist wars for national liberation, will probably pull something off to create turmoil at the border. But I certainly have to hand it to the people in the Minutemen trying to do their thing, and the Border Patrol trying to do their thing, just getting their paycheck, doing their jobs, but yet the whole picture in place is the UN system. They just deport them again, so they come back again, deport them again, they come back again, deport them again, then they come back again. The situation is most obvious to me, who has done a few decades of research into what's going on. Point being, Agenda 21 being implemented, implementation of human rights treaties being implemented, Executive Order 13107, December 10, 1998, by President William Jefferson Clinton, who most assuredly must be a Rockefeller. President Clinton is in charge of the refugee program for the tsunami disaster. President Clinton will be slid in as the next Secretary General of the United Nations in 1996. You better believe it. You wait. I guarantee you President William Jefferson Clinton, former President Clinton, will be the next Secretary General of the United Nations. This is where everything's leading to and moving towards. The coalition in the Middle East is the UN police state being implemented with a smiley face in the Middle East while we enforce UN directives, the IMF is in control, and there's where you have it. In 1973, there was Senate Report 93-549, War and Emergency Powers Act, We've covered this before. It was a report of the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency United States Senate. Quite revealing information. Since March 9, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. In fact, there are now in effect four presidential proclaimed states of national emergency. In addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933. And once again, think about all this, listeners. Think about the Federal Reserve Act, World War I, League of Nations. We would not get into the League of Nations. The build up of Adolf Hitler. Of course, the American people had to be brought to their knees by a major depression. And then the build up of Adolf Hitler, which the Bush family was highly influential in that as well. Hamburg America lines, the build up of Adolf Hitler, the Bush family had much involvement there. But think of the transition where we've been since 1933. The people were brought to their knees. The people were taken out of their depression by the war. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, which was encouraged by this government. So you see the transitions, and we have been in a declared state of national emergency. And we'll get into this as we can. The emergencies continue today. The dictatorship continues today, both left and right, Republican and Democrat. Doesn't matter who it is, they continue. Many articles referring to the Oklahoma City disaster in the Oklahoma papers. And it's a disaster because they don't really know what happened. The people of Oklahoma don't really know the truth because they don't research. They don't try and find out the truth of what's going on. Just like the people coming from south of the border, which are just pawns being manipulated to come here because of the depressed economy south of the border, because NAFTA did not make the changes that were supposed to happen to the people of Mexico. This is a lie. And this is why it was sold on us, because it was going to keep the immigration from coming to America, the migration from coming to America. It was supposed to stop that. It did not, because it was planned this way. We're embroiled in a UN system. The engineering of the control of food is well underway. We're becoming more and more dependent on foreign food on a daily basis. Prepare, is what I say. Prepare for all emergencies. As much as you can prepare. Prepare for your neighbors. As much as you can. Someday you may need to wish you have prepared. I hope that doesn't happen. But the engineering of things and situations going on is very obvious to those that do the research. Until tomorrow night, research, go to the website, AmericanExpose.com. Much information there by Dennis of Missouri. Good night and God bless you all.
Discover the most important health discovery in 40 years, the goji berry. The world's number one nutritionist, Dr. Earl Mundell, has discovered through his research one of the most powerful anti-aging foods ever discovered, a 2,000